This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Friday today. I'm not actually driving home from work because it's Friday. Yesterday was New Year's. Today is January 2nd, 2015. 2015. Unbelievable. It's 2015. It is episode 301. Which is over 300 episodes, which is a little bit unbelievable as well. Just got done taking my dad grocery shopping, so that's all taken care of. Wasn't in at work yesterday, which is the reason I didn't record the podcast going home. So this might be a little short, but, you know, I have a tendency to just keep gabbing until I'm done, so I'm sure it's fine. Big news this week. I think I had mentioned last week that my son-in-law was up for being elected senior pastor at Praise Assembly. That meeting took place on Tuesday, and he was elected as senior pastor by a healthy margin. So it's amazing to watch. You know, it's one thing to develop principles in life and live according to those principles and see those principles serve you well. As those principles are serving you well, there is always in the back of your head a wonderment, well, are they serving me well because it just happened to work out that way? And certainly in recent years, there's been a great deal of talk about privilege and hidden privilege and the advantages. And I understand, I definitely understand what people are saying there. The fact that I'm white certainly has helped my station. The fact that I'm a guy has helped my station. The fact that I am over 6 feet tall has helped my station. The fact that I am not hideous looking has helped my station. The fact that I have a nice smile, even though it is often stained from walnuts, has certainly helped my station. All those things have helped. There's no question they have helped. But there's also no question that in my mind at least, the principles have helped. Generosity, kindness, being loving, being a patient person, being a diligent person. Because, as I'm fond of saying, there's a shortage of quality workmanship in the world. And wherever you plug in, if you are a benefit, if you are someone whom the authorities, those who are in charge, look at as someone who helps them to survive better, who increases the possibility that they will continue to exist, they will keep you around, and they will find more things for you to do. And if you are doing a job where they are convinced that you are benefiting them, they will increase your benefits. I mean, these are just, and if they don't, then you probably need to go find someplace else. Now, I understand, you know, there's a lot of, well, you can find someplace else because you're a white guy who's over 6 feet tall and all that. That's okay. But there is certainly a non-trivial contribution that good personal discipline, kind behavior, generosity contributes to. There's a non-trivial advantage that gives you. Still, there's always that doubt that lingers in the back of your mind. Are you sure that's what it is, or did you just get lucky? Yeah, for me, combating that doubt is, I think, simpler because I've gotten lucky, quote-unquote, in two different areas on a national level twice in a row. So, you know, first with the music notation stuff and second with the Knitpickers guides. those were can both be considered successes. Not so much with the VaneWorks stand, but also with my own internet service provider business, that went well. Not so much yet with my writing, although my writing is successful because of what it contributes to my spirit. Having said all that, it is fascinating to watch those whom I have had the chance to communicate with, who have understood what I'm saying and have applied it to their lives. It has been fascinating to watch the progression in their lives. First, with my daughter, who I don't know if I've ever shared the whole story on a podcast, but it's really been amazing how God has provided for her and for Alan through her work that she does as an actuary, when in fact she decided to become an actuary specifically because it was the degree she could get fastest, because she knew I was not going to pay for a wedding until she had a degree. So it's been fascinating to watch that process in play. It's also been fascinating to watch the process in play with Alan. He and I have spent a lot of time talking. He obviously has done his own study and come to the conclusion that a lot of the things that I'm saying about the flesh and the spirit are true, and has applied himself. And he went on for master's commission, knowing that he wanted to go into the ministry, realizing that it would be beneficial for him to have a degree in that, that that was part of being in the club. And so he went on to a Bible college, got a degree for that. The day after he officially got his degree, he was asked to come on as interim children's pastor. He commended himself well in that. He was then brought on as youth pastor. He commended himself well in that. Then they added the responsibilities of associate pastor. He commended himself as well in that. In the process, he went to Evangel College, got a degree, got a master's degree in organizational leadership. He commended himself well on that. I think he was valedictorian of his class in that. You know, and when the time came and our senior pastor, our former senior pastor, decided that it was time to resign, he really felt like it was time. Recommended Alan. The first hurdle was going to be, will the board even recommend him for consideration? The board met with him. He asked questions. They asked questions. He commended himself well with them. They unanimously agreed to recommend him as senior pastor. He answered questions for the church body. He commended himself well there. And Tuesday night, they elected him at 34, the senior pastor of a church that is, it's running 500-ish, something like that. So it's a very good sized church for someone his age. He already has tons of ideas as to what he wants to accomplish. He's surrounding himself with some of the elder ministers who are in the congregation, who have retired, who have the wisdom of having done this already. You know, it's these principles of diligence and generosity and patience and kindness and mercy, they pay dividends. They work. As opposed to things that do not work. And I came across this article, and this lady, brain something, brain think brain, oh, what is the name of the website? Her name is Maria Popova, P-O-P-O-V-A, and she runs a website that just has all kinds of different things. Well, one of the articles she had on there, which was, I thought, a really interesting article, was called "Why Do Men Stupefy Themselves?" Men being short for humanity. Why does humanity stupefy itself? And she was actually harking back to an essay that Leo Tolstoy wrote. And I think Leo Tolstoy has a lot of good things to say here. I just don't think it's quite in the slot. Because, yeah, it sounds good, and yeah, but I think there's the little added benefit that you could put in there that if you're willing to accept the basic premise of flesh and spirit, it just makes everything make sense. So she started off the article by quoting from Isaac Asimov when a reader berated him about the expense of space exploration. And Isaac Asimov quipped in response to that, quote, "The people of the United States spend exactly as much money on booze alone as the space programs." So that was an interesting fact at that time. So, Leo Tolstoy, why do men stupefy themselves? And he starts off just exploring the question. What is the explanation for the fact that people use things that stupefy them? Vodka, wine, beer, hashish, opium, tobacco, and other things less common. Ether, morphia, fly agaric. I don't know what that is. Fly agaric, etc. Why did the practice begin? Why has it spread so quickly? And why is it still spreading among all sorts of people, savage and simpler? And he says, if you talk to people, they'll say, oh, I like it. Oh, well, everybody does it. Oh, whatever. A friend of mine said, well, it takes the edge off. You know, it makes me feel good. Why shouldn't I? Cheer me up. Everyone does it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So really, is that the true reason? Well, he says that when observing his own life, a man may often notice in himself two different beings. Of course, this is where my ears perked up. I went, oh, here we go. Two different beings. One is blind and physical. The other sees and is spiritual. The blind animal eats, drinks, rests, sleeps, propagates, and moves like a wound-up machine. The seeing spiritual being that is bound up with the animal does nothing of itself, but only appraises the activities of the animal being, coinciding with it when approving its activity and diverging from it when disapproving. So, in the same manner, the seeing being, whose manifestation we commonly call conscience, always points with one end towards the right and the other end towards the wrong. And so it's like a compass. We do not notice it when we follow the course it shows, the course from wrong to right. But one need only do something contrary to the indication of conscience to become aware of this spiritual being. You know, so he's saying that when you do something wrong and you feel guilty, well, that's your conscience there. And that feeling of, when that's the thing that this all comes down to. And as a navigator is conscious that he is on the wrong track and cannot continue to work the oars, the sails, or the engines till he adjusts his course to the indicator of the compass, or has obliterated his consciousness of this divergence, each man has felt the duality of the animal activity in his conscious, can only continue the activity by adjusting that activity to the demands of conscience, or by hiding himself from the indication conscience gives him of the wrongness of his animal life. So Tolstoy is basically saying, you've got all these animal desires and emotions and driving you, and then you have the conscience sitting over here, and the conscience is telling you that's the wrong thing to do. And so your choices are to listen to that and say, oh, yeah, that kind of is the wrong thing for me to do. I should stop doing that. Or to dull down that voice. Those are the two things you're dealing with. So why do men stupefy themselves? Well, in his opinion then, there's really two things that's going on. You can externally settle the voice of the conscience within you, or distract yourself from the voice of the conscience by running around, playing games, you know, distractions. I don't think the mail's going to be here yet, but I'm just going to check. You can externally do that, or you can somehow try to deaden the internal voice, in Tolstoy's opinion. And that, he says, is why people stupefy themselves. Because they're trying to deaden the internal voice within them. And that, you know, that's not bad. That's pretty good. I think it's a little more complex than that. He did also make an interesting observation that people encourage the stupefaction of others because they realize that will help those others to make bad decisions. And if they're trying to get that other person to make that kind of bad decision, then if they can get them stupefied, they will. Those are good observations. I just don't think they're quite sufficient. I'm backing into my garage. And here's why. The premise is that whenever we feel that gnawing within us, that is the voice of the spirit being within us, and it is that voice of the spirit being within us that causes us the misery that we feel. And as I have said in times past, I don't think that's quite right. And the reason I don't think that's quite right is because our spirits are connected to God. And Paul says that God in Christ Jesus reconciled the world to himself. Paul says that God is love. Well, John says that God is love. Paul defines love as this amazing list of traits in 1 Corinthians, patient, kind, long-suffering, etc., etc., etc. None of those traits are condemning. Now, we try to dance around this in Christianity to say, well, the Holy Spirit convicts us, but he doesn't condemn us. And that there is a quality of conviction that can come to us, a strength of, you know, that would be unwise to do that. But there is also, I think, quite a bit of condemnation that comes that we attribute to our conscience and we attribute to our spiritual beings when I don't think it's the spiritual being at all. And I think if we just relegate the animal to the flesh and just say, oh, that's just all of our animal stuff, all we're left with there is just sort of instincts and hungers. And it doesn't explain sufficiently the dynamics of what is going on. Because I think that part of what we feel as condemnation is in fact flesh. And that it's not, the flesh is not just instincts and appetites. but it is a scheming being that is dedicated to our destruction and will use any tactics, any voice, anything that will make us miserable. So, for instance, it will, young lady goes into a bar because she's so lonely, she hasn't been with anybody, and she'll pick out a guy in a bar who's obviously a player. Obviously he is. And the flesh goes, he's cute. Oh, you know, you could go home with him tonight. You could just feel so wonderful tonight in his arms. You could do that. And so she goes ahead and she does that. She hooks up. She goes home. They have sex. He leaves in the morning because he doesn't care less because he's moving on to the next one. Because that's why her flesh picked that guy. And then she gets up and she has that morning after condemnation. You slut. How can you just go out like that and do that? Well, see, according to Tolstoy, that feeling that she has, that would come from her spirit being, from her moral compass. And my contention would be, no, that feeling of condemnation she's having is coming from the flesh. Because as I'm fond of saying, shame is the stick that the flesh beats you with after it throws away the carrot. So it'll say, come on, come on, come on, that'll be great, do that, do that. And you'll turn around and go, how could you do that? Because it knows that condemnation voice is going to be misinterpreted as coming from the Spirit, as coming from God. And what it's trying to do is drive a wedge between that person and God. And so I think it's very easy for us to confuse the leading of the flesh that supposedly occurs when we go against our moral compass and confuse that for our spirit being when that's not our spirit being at all. Because our spirit being is loving and kind and generous and gracious and merciful and gentle. It hopes all things, believes all things, trusts all things about us. It wants the best for us. And what our communion in our spirit with God primarily communicates to us is your life is better when you make decisions driven by the Spirit. When you listen to the Spirit and you move in that direction, you do the things that you are being encouraged to do. Now, I think it's absolutely true that people do stupefy themselves to get away from that voice, because that voice can be persistent, and it can be, you know, very relentless in saying, this is not good for you. You need to make a change here. And people do sometimes stupefy themselves to get away from that voice. But they also stupefy themselves, and I think primarily they stupefy themselves, not because of that voice, but because of another voice that the flesh adopts. And that is this fear of non-existence, this fear of the future, this fear of pain, this fear of what will happen if I lose my job? What will happen if X happens? What? The future. This relentless march we have forward into the future and the anxiety about the future, the anxiety about death. I think those things are every bit the drivers to cause people to stupefy themselves as working against their own moral compasses or trying to deaden the voice of the Spirit within them. And in fact, I think the fear of the future, the fear of death, fear of non-existence, all that anxiety, that has nothing to do with Spirit. That is all flesh-driven. Because if we were truly, truly hearing the voice of the Spirit, the clear message that we would be hearing over and over is there is nothing to fear. Everything's going to be fine. There is nothing to fear. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.